And it went from, Dave, thanks for all of your advice, to, you know, you're a charlatan snake oil salesman, because like there's about 20,000 trolls, the Death Squad guys. Literally, they sicked them on me. So all of a sudden, my social media just went all to hell overnight. I'm like, wow, this is kind of freaking me out. And I didn't really know how to take it. So I did some of the weird personal development stuff that I do. And I just realized after a little while, every time Joe says something bad about me, I'm selling more coffee. Even though like it kind of hurts. And I just realized I didn't do anything wrong. I did everything at the highest integrity. Bottom line is, I'm pretty sure that there's a reason the companies that Joe owns are starting to sell MCT oil and trying to copy the coffee. They just couldn't do the mold-free thing. So we tried to say it wasn't real. And I would challenge anyone who thinks it's not real to just read what I write.
Damn. Okay. That's spicy.
I'm just gonna say, Joe, thank you, brother. I appreciate all the sales. I appreciate you. I appreciate all the stuff you're doing in the world. And I don't feel bad for not getting high before I was interviewed on your show, because I would have sounded like a total idiot.
This is episode 104 of the Michaela Peterson podcast. Today, I am joined by Dave Asprey. Dave Asprey is the founder and chairman of Bulletproof and one of the world's first biohackers, probably the first. Not only is he a four-time New York bestselling author, but he's helped so many people improve their health. We spoke about internal and external factors that can impact one's mind and body, from fasting and dietary restrictions to supplements and mold, what he went through, Joe Rogan. We discussed sleep problems in depth, and I've actually fixed my sleep since then. Turns out I was reacting to citric acid in the electrolytes I was taking. That's been keeping me awake at night for an entire year. Yeah, I'll be releasing something about that. If you enjoyed this, please remember to subscribe. And I believe Dave is hosting a biohacking conference this September. If you guys are interested in going to Florida, meeting a whole bunch of interesting open individuals, learning about health, I'd recommend checking that out. It's linked below. I'd like to introduce you, or reintroduce you, to one of my favorite snacks, Brooklyn Biltong, available at brooklynbiltong.com. One of the easiest ways to get healthy is to replace the overprocessed food and snacks that are no good that you're eating with healthy food that's still kind of snacky, if you can do it, like jerky or a biltong. I went cold turkey into pure health food. No packaged foods, no fun, no air fryers. I didn't know how to cook. I was 23. It was really not fun. And a huge part of that was because there actually weren't any packaged foods that were healthy enough that I could comfortably eat with my insanely limited autoimmune paleo diet at the time. Now I'm on the Lion diet and it's even more limited. But I can still eat these guys. BrooklynBiltong.com is a small company that makes biltong, which is a South African dried meat dish. And their options are either spiced, like so, or made with just salt and apple cider vinegar, their naked version. Code MP gets you 15% off. These ingredients are beautiful. Apple cider vinegar, real salt, onion powder, black pepper, lemon juice, rosemary, and beef. If you're snacking all the time, consider switching to something like that. It's a health food, but it's still in a bag. You just switch over. It's easy. BrooklynBiltong.com. Use code MP for 15% off. Enjoy the episode. Dave Asprey, welcome to my podcast.
Michaela, I'm super happy to be here.
I'm excited to talk to you. I've known about you for years. The guy behind Bulletproof Coffee.
Yeah, a few other little biohacking things here and there, including I'm one of the early major grass-fed meat voices where it's so important to get it. And watching you as you dealt with a lot of the same stuff that I dealt with just in your own health and saying, oh, look what happens when you eat the right meat and you get rid of bad stuff in your gut. So I am impressed and amused and just happy to see all the changes that you've had in your life from switching out how you eat, because it makes such a difference.
It really, really does. I actually got better. It's funny. For the first year in a bed, I ate mainly grain fed. It wasn't grain fed like corn fed, because Canada, I think, has even their low quality beef seems to be better than the low quality beef in America. But it was
mainly a low standard, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. But it was mainly grass fed, grain finished.
Yeah.
But now, you know, I eat the best I can afford. So I eat grass fed, because why wouldn't you eat grass fed if you can buy grass fed?
You do it partly for the soil, partly for the animal, and also to avoid glyphosate, because there's so much of that in grain-fed beef and it disrupts gut bacteria. And if you're working on healing stuff, it's one of those things where we're kind of a reflection of the soil that we live on and around.
Okay, interesting. We should probably get into that. But we should start off, if anyone doesn't know who you are or isn't familiar with your work, can you give a brief background about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I'm a former Silicon Valley computer hacker and entrepreneur. About 10 years ago, I started the field of biohacking. And the original definition of that is the art and science of changing the environment around you and inside of you so that you have control of your own biology. I did that because I weighed 300 pounds. I had brain fog, chronic fatigue syndrome, high risk of stroke and heart attack, arthritis, and a bunch of other bad stuff going on before I was 30. So I'm financially successful, you know, at the company that held Google's first servers, and I have the accelerator pressed all the way to the floor and I'm slowing down. And I'm like, what are you doing? I'm 26 years old. And so I bought disability insurance because I wouldn't have hired myself. I was truly afraid. I ended up spending hundreds of thousands of dollars fixing my biology and then about more than a million more upgrading my biology. I'm well known for Bulletproof Coffee, which is a venture-backed company that I raised $80 million for. And I've stepped away from that entirely. I'm now CEO of Upgrade Labs, which is franchising this year to hundreds of locations. Around this is a facility that lets you go in and upgrade human biology better than you could at a gym.
Okay, that's fascinating. Okay, I want to know more about that. Upgrade Labs.
Yep, upgradelabs.com. There you go. Now I just did that subtle plug. Did you see it?
That I did, yeah. So where can I go to get that? Upgradelabs.com. Okay, I want to get into that. Can we start off? Well, you gave a brief background about what biohacking is. So can you give me just right off the bat, what can the regular person do to upgrade? Like top three biohacks, and then we can delve into them.
Well, one of the things that happens is you get something wrong with you and you say, I'm going to do what's supposed to work, which usually comes from big pharma or big food telling you buy our stuff, it'll work. They also told you smoking was good for you. So you realize that doesn't work because you got worse. That's what happened to me. And then you say, okay, I'm going to do what works and I want to spend the least amount of time to get the most benefit possible. The three things that are going to give you the most benefit from biohacking is learning how to get better quality sleep. I don't mean more sleep. I mean more sleep and less time so that your body makes the hormones it's supposed to make when you're asleep. Learning how to intermittent fast, which was the topic of my last book. And this is just teaching your body that it's safe, normal, and healthy to go for 12 to 16 hours without food, without inducing a panic response. It'll make you live longer and it'll actually make you feel better. Now, skipping breakfast is cheaper than buying breakfast, even if you like Egg McMuffins or something. So you can do this. It doesn't cost you anything. Learning to sleep well at night is usually changing some practices. There might be $50 or $100 worth of stuff to buy, but it's not expensive. And you can always use aluminum foil to black out your bedroom. So that's 10 cents worth of foil. We're talking very cheap stuff. And then the third thing is learning what to eat and more importantly, what not to eat. And that's the subject of the Bulletproof Diet, which has helped people lose more than 1 million pounds. And I tell you, there's five things in foods that are messing with you. I call them kryptonite. And funny enough, there's lectins, which are plant toxins. There's oxalates, which are plant toxins. And this is first published in 2011. There's phytic acid, which blocks your ability to absorb minerals, which is also a plant toxin. There's mycotoxins, which come from fungus that eats plants and also accumulates in animals. And so four of these major toxins are coming from plants. And what's the fifth one? Oh, omega-6 fatty acids, the inflammatory seed oils. So these are all, I'm saying, don't do the stuff that harms you. Stop that. And then you can do something that makes you feel better. So I'm going to boil all that down to replace all of your seed oils with grass-fed butter, because grass-fed butter is $3 a pound. And if you just did that, wow, you're going to win.
Okay, that's handy. You said something about phytic acid?
Yes.
Okay, so what is that?
Phytic acid is commonly found in nuts, but most commonly in grains and things like beans. And it is there to keep animals from eating the plant, because plants don't want us to eat them. They don't want us to eat their babies. They can't run away because they have roots. So they either develop hard shells or spikes or usually chemicals. So if you were to go out in the forest and just eat some plants, you'll probably end up in the hospital if you make it that far. Most plants will kill you right away. The ones that we consider edible, it means you won't die right away if you eat them during a famine. And what we have to do is choose the low inflammation plants that you can eat over time. What phytic acid does is it sticks to things like zinc that are necessary for your body, and they prevent your body from absorbing it. So if you're one of those raw vegans like I used to be, or when I stopped being a raw vegan, a normal vegan, what you've actually normal vegan, is that a thing? Anyway, I went and I said, okay, what's going on here? Well, you get mineral deficient because all of the minerals that you eat from your plant proteins are not absorbable because they're always coming with phytic acid. So for every pound of plant protein, you need a pound of meat protein to overcome the phytic acid that prevents you from getting the minerals like zinc that are good for protecting you from COVID.
Okay, that's very interesting. So do you think part of the reason that there are so many people who are zinc deficient is because they're eating plants or anything that's too high in phytic acid?
Phytic acid is a major cause, but frankly, glyphosate is probably a bigger cause. Glyphosate, or Roundup as it's known, is this amazing herbicide that destroys soil. And we have this habit of spraying it now on garbanzo beans, on wheat, on most grains before we harvest them because it makes them dry up more quickly at the end of the season. So especially in the U.S., the average person now is getting about a pound a year of this weed killer that affects your gut bacteria. And it unfortunately also is a chelator of zinc. So I think that's why. It's a combination of phytic acid if you're going to eat a lot of plants, and the plants we double down by spraying them with something that hurts our gut bacteria.
Okay, that's lovely. Did you suffer from Lyme disease?
Well, yes. Well, at least I had Lyme disease. Whether I was suffering from it is questionable. Okay. About 90% of people who have Lyme disease actually have toxic mold. So what I had was, I had provable toxic mold exposure and symptoms of that. And I had started a lab testing company along with my wife, who's a medical doctor. And we proved that I had an active Lyme disease infection. But since mold toxins and Lyme toxins are almost identical chemically, almost everyone who says I have Lyme disease, if we run the labs, you're going to find out you actually have toxic mold. So I always tell people, treat the mold first. I've done a documentary, it's free, moldymovie.com, talking about that. Anyone with Lyme who sees that will be like, oh my God, that's me. Oh, and I have black stains on my ceiling, and I think I have Lyme disease. So you really have to discern between the two. There are some people who have Lyme, but if you and I walk down the street and gathered pee from 100 people, 95 of them are going to have Lyme spirochete DNA in their urine. They don't have Lyme disease, though. It's because their immune system works. So the mold takes out the immune system, then the Lyme takes over. So it's a very complex disease. And I don't want to say there isn't such a thing as Lyme. There is. It just always travels with mold. When you treat the mold, the body can resolve the Lyme unless you have co-infections, which I also had. Well, you can do a test. There's a company called My Mycolab that will test for an immune response to mold toxins. And they'll be able to show you, do you have an active mold infection in the body, or are you getting exposed in your environment? Which is probably the most advanced test you can get now. You can also get a urine test to see, am I peeing out mycotoxins? Which all of us do, because food always has some amount. And what I've found, and there are dozens, actually hundreds of studies supporting this, is when you lower the burden of mold in your food and in your environment, your body works better. And that's one of the practices in my recommendations, is like, let's not have mold standards in the US that either don't exist or are 5 or 10 times higher than European standards. So when food or certain beverages get rejected from many countries, they send them to the US and Canada, and then we eat them because our standards are not very good. Like, seriously, China will reject coffee and we'll drink it.
That's exactly what I want to hear. Okay, that's really interesting. I grew up, when I left home, we found out there's black mold in our basement. Like, yep. All over the basement, which was pretty brutal. Yeah, not good. My brother
slept in that basement.
I slept in the basement too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's something that both of us have as like, that's what lit the fuse for us.
Okay. Okay. But then say you remove that, you know, like, I've moved around. I'm in a condo building, right? Not right now, but usually I live in a condo building. It's fairly new. There's no mold there. Theoretically, if you remove that kind of thing from your environment, do you have to recover somehow, or can you just kind of wait and your body normalizes if you're not in a toxic environment?
It depends in part on your genetics. It depends in part on how long you were there. And it also depends on whether the mold took up residence in the body, which it can do. There are certain people, and Northern Europeans tend to have more of this, but not always. And we are the ones who are wired to survive famines, and the ones who are wired to be able to go steal from the neighboring tribe. So we have the genetics that allow us to have blood that clots quickly, and we recycle our fatty acids better than the average human. I am one of these. It's called HLA-DR4 is the genetic subtype.
Okay.
And this is great because it means that, okay, I'm in Europe and we're going to like roll across the Czech Republic or something. And let's just go to this village. We don't know anyone, like kill a few people, steal a few bags of food, take an arrow hit, maybe not bleed to death, not die of whatever current plague is here, and then live to fight another day. So you do that for a few thousand years, you get the genes to be basically like a bandit. Well, this is good because if there's no food for a while, you're going to survive. Unfortunately, mold and Lyme toxins recirculate in your bile, and we are genetically wired to conserve bile so that we can live through famines better than people have to eat more. Well, pros and cons in today's environment, since those toxins are fat soluble, we just keep recycling those toxins, and it can take a very long time to get rid of those if you've been exposed and you're not actively detoxing. As I've written in some of my books, it takes a little bit more than 2 years to replace half the fat in your cell membranes. So imagine if you put a drop of blue food coloring, like in a bottle of water, like it slowly percolates through, but then you're gonna have to like pour in more water to dilute it out. Well, that's how those mold toxins are. Once they've percolated into the lining of your nerves, into your brain, into your every cell in your body, every mitochondrial membrane is made of fat. So now it's like you've been dyed light blue, and you have to wash those through with the higher fat diet, increasing bile turnover and using toxin binders. If you don't do that, you'll probably be one of those highly sensitive people, possibly for 10 or 20 years. The other thing that mold will do in the environment, there's always this amazing interplay. And this goes back to the definition of biohacking. It changes the environment around you and inside of you. So if mold's out here, mold makes antibiotics. By definition, we are biotics. We are powered by bacteria, mold and bacteria, ancient enemies. Now, the mold will talk to the bacteria in your sinuses, and the bacteria there says, I'm under threat. Let me make a biofilm and let me start creating things that cause brain fog. So now, even if you leave the mold, you have this kind of slimy infection in the back of your sinuses right up against your brain that's making a toxin that makes you have brain fog. So I dealt with this profound brain fog that made me feel stupid, to be honest. I'm in business school at Wharton and I'm failing. I'm like, what is going on? So you really do want to bind the toxins, and you can heal from all this, but it takes time, and you've got to calm the immune system and then heal the nervous system, heal the lining of the nerves. And I will tell you, I am much higher functioning cognitively than I've ever been in my entire life, energetically, the whole thing. And it's because I got rid of those toxins.
Okay. That's very interesting. So the DNA that makes people into bandits, you mentioned HLA. Does that cover all the HLAs, like the one that predisposes you to ankylosing spondylitis and celiac disease? Is it just HLA and all of them?
Well, it's the HLA-DR4 are the subtypes that make you more sensitive to mold and Lyme. But many of the other HLA is like a big part of your DNA.
Yeah.
And frankly, there's people who are probably better qualified to answer that one than I am. I'm not a geneticist, but I know enough to be dangerous on the genetics front.
Fair enough. That's very interesting. This episode is also brought to you by Grass-Fed Beef Organs by Ancestral Supplements. Ancestral Supplements makes New Zealand-sourced nose-to-tail organ meats, bone marrow, and beef organs in simple, convenient gelatin capsules, like so. Traditional peoples, Native Americans, and early ancestral healers believed that eating the organs from a healthy animal would strengthen and support the health of the corresponding organ of the individual. For instance, the traditional way of treating a person with a weak heart was to feed the person the heart of a healthy animal. Similarly, eating the kidneys of a healthy animal was believed to support urinary ailments and overall kidney health. Pancreas was fed to people with digestive problems, and spleen was fed to people with immune and blood deficiencies. But now, you don't have to do that. You can just take these. Our early ancestors knew this, which is why their traditional diets included the frequent and nourishing consumption of nose-to-tail organs. Visit ancestralsupplements.com to see what they can do for you. Ancestral Supplements, putting back in what the modern world has left out. Enjoy the rest of the episode. Okay, let's cover this before we delve into more. I had a number of people in my audience ask about Joe Rogan, because apparently there's something going on with you and Joe Rogan. So can you give a bit of a background about what that's about and what happened?
Sure. Something like 7 years ago, I went on the Joe Rogan show three times. And in fact, I'll post something on Instagram because you can't see it. Joe pulled it off of Spotify. He's been trying to hide this. And Bulletproof Coffee changed his brain for the better. I mean, he's worn the Bulletproof t-shirt on there and was just a huge fan. And and he's like, oh my goodness, grass-fed beef. This is so important. I love all this. But then one of his buddies decided to try to steal both the name Bulletproof as well as my ideas. And one of the companies he owns decided to try to steal and copy my products. And the day they made that decision, he made up some stuff around me, as well as some fake tests that have never existed, as far as I can tell, saying that my coffee was moldy. Guys, I've spent way more than $100,000 on lab tests over the years. The Bulletproof coffee that I created is lab tested to the highest possible standards. But he basically tried to discredit me for quite a while. It looks like it was partly financially motivated and partly probably one of his buddies manipulating him. And so I learned a lot about bullying and what bullies do when they grow up. It was rough because I'm like, I'm helping people. I'm motivated by not letting people get to 300 pounds like I did and just not have brain fog. And I know the kind of suffering out there. And it went from, Dave, thanks for all of your advice, to, you know, you're a charlatan snake oil salesman, because like there's about 20,000 trolls, the death squad guys. And literally they sicked them on me. So all of a sudden my social media just went all to hell overnight. I'm like, wow, this is kind of freaking me out. And I didn't really know how to take it. So I did some of the weird personal development stuff that I do. And I just realized after a little while, every time Joe says something bad about me, I'm selling more coffee, even though like it kind of hurts. And I just realized I didn't do anything wrong. I did everything at the highest integrity. And what's cool is, now that Joe's pulled those things down, there's fair use exemptions. So I put together a compilation of all the things Joe's said, and like, you can try and reel it back by deleting it. But bottom line is, I'm pretty sure that there's a reason the companies that Joe owns are starting to sell MCT oil and trying to copy the coffee. They just couldn't do the mold-free thing. So we tried to say it wasn't real. And I would challenge anyone who thinks it's not real to just read what I write.
Damn. Okay. That's spicy.
I'm just going to say, Joe, thank you, brother. I appreciate all the sales. I appreciate you. I appreciate all the stuff you're doing in the world. And I don't feel bad for not getting high before I was interviewed on your show, because I would have sounded like a total idiot.
Okay. At the beginning of this is something I actually really need help with. At the beginning of this episode, you mentioned sleep and how important that is. And when I first kind of started my health journey, I didn't recognize how important sleep was, because I was constantly like totally fucked up. So I just didn't know that sleeping didn't make me feel any better, because I was so sick that I just didn't recognize how important it is. And now, particularly, and I've seen this across people who go to the zero carb diet, this doesn't happen for everybody. And I've seen a lot of people improve their sleep. But for me, I'm kind of stuck on this, because if I have any type of plan, I get arthritis eventually. I haven't figured out how to get past that. But I have noticed that my sleep isn't as good as it should be. And
oh, this is so good.
Yeah, it improved. Like, I mean, I'm way healthier than I was. And I've been under a lot of stress with family health. And so it's hard to say how much of that is playing into my sleep, because whenever I get stressed, I don't sleep as well. But I have seen some people who go zero carb have a harder time staying asleep throughout the night. So what are some tricks people can use, whether or not they're zero carb, to improve their sleep quality?
Back when I was developing the Bulletproof Diet before I wrote the book, I went through a 3-month period of, I can't quite claim zero carbs. I had one serving of broccoli every day. That was the entire extent of my carbs.
Low.
So that's about as close to zero as you can get, right?
Yeah.
And I experienced the same thing that happens. I call it the keto trap. And there's a similar one that I call the fasting trap in my latest book. And it's that if something is good, more of it is better. It's like, it's just a human behavioral thing that we do, right? So when it comes to the zero carb thing, you feel freaking amazing for the first month or so, right? Like the curtains have lifted, your brain works, your joints don't hurt. I was diagnosed with arthritis when I was 14. So same thing, wow. many plants do that for me. And I know the ones that don't, and those are the ones that generally don't do it for most people. And when you get that right, you feel so good. So you say, I'm going to do it even more. And there is something that hits women before men. For women, it's usually 2 to 4 weeks before men. And it's always in this order. If you're over fasting or you're over ketoing, I'm going to call it. And step one is a reduction in sleep quality. No matter how much you sleep, you wake up and you feel like you didn't really sleep. I've been tracking my sleep for 15 years. So when I did this experiment, I used to wear a headband at night to track my sleep. And what I found was after 3 months of this, I was waking up 12 times per night without knowing it. And I was getting 5 minutes of deep sleep a night.
Oof. So okay.
But I didn't know it. You won't detect this.
Yeah.
So usually with women, 4 to 6 weeks of zero carb, and sometimes even less, they're just like, I'd wake up and I'd feel like I didn't sleep. And then the second thing is, my monthly cycle isn't as regular as it should be. And the third thing is my hair gets thinner, right? With guys, give us an extra couple of weeks. First, sleep quality goes down. Then the second thing is I wake up without a kickstand. And the third thing is my hair gets thinner. So how do you fix it? What's going on here? Well, here's what's going on with you, Michaela. When the body is at rest, there's two kinds of cells in the brain, two big categories. And the neurons, which are the rock stars of the brain, they totally like ketones. And they're super happy to have ketones. And if they have a choice of glucose or ketones, they will choose ketones because they need the energy. Well, the maintenance crew, the janitors, the immune cells that control inflammation in the brain, they want carbs more than ketones. And this is why the Bulletproof Diet is cyclical, going in and out of ketosis, but it's never a high carb diet and it's not a high sugar diet, and the type of fat matters and all that. But what's happening with you is your body says, at night I need to be pumping this glymphatic system in and out. The glymphatic system is something that inside the brain, the cells, when you sleep properly, they dump a lot of water that contains some inflammatory proteins that happen during the day, and then they're supposed to get flushed out, and then it's refilled with clean cerebral spinal fluid. In order to do that, you got to have enough mitochondrial energy, and the body says, I don't have enough glucose to do this. So how do I get glucose? Oh, easy. How about some adrenaline and cortisol, which are the two hormones that make the easiest and fastest access to glucose? In other words, the brain says low energy emergency, and it does this between 3 and 4 in the morning is my guess, right? Is that the time when you're most likely to wake up? That's when it is for most people.
Probably. I don't know. I haven't really woken up. I don't know.
Do you have a ring?
It's possible. I use an Oura ring. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Me too. So that'll usually tell you about the time, but it can be between 2 and 5, but it's usually around 3 or 4 is when the peak is. And what that is just the body saying, I needed some carbs. It didn't need a lot of carbs. It just needed a little bit. So here's a tip that I have been writing about forever. And it's one thing that it drives everyone nuts because it shouldn't work, but it does. And it's raw honey.
Okay.
And it's a small amount.
I've been doing that before bed because I thought maybe it would help.
It does for some people, but not everyone.
Yeah.
Hasn't helped you?
No, it hasn't. And it wasn't like, I mean, I can eat honey now. At the beginning, I couldn't eat honey. It would make me feel weird. Now I can eat honey. I can drink tea. I'm less sensitive than I was. We'll talk about plants next, but no, So, which is why I thought maybe it was stress too.
Well, it is stress because adrenaline and cortisol are stress. But what will happen is you'll think it's stress because the body biologically asks for stress hormones to get you some sugar. And then when the stress hormones kick in, you're going to, what am I stressed about? And whatever is top of mind, you'll have ruminating, speeding thoughts in the middle of the night. So you can't go back to sleep because you're stressing about stuff. But you're not stressing because of the stuff. You're stressing because of biology, which made you think about the stuff. It's kind of a chicken and egg thing.
I definitely have stuff to stress about. It might be both.
You totally do.
It might be both.
I mean, I've been following you on Instagram.
how much carb would somebody need theoretically to give their body the glucose that they would potentially need to not have this cortisol spike?
It totally depends on the size of the body and the type of carb. The reason raw honey is kind of magic is raw honey preferentially goes to liver glycogen. And glycogen is how we store carbohydrates in our body. Liver glycogen will feed the brain and muscle glycogen will feed the rest of the body. So if you only have a little bit of raw honey, it'll go to the liver and then the liver will have it ready for the brain when you need it. So it's preferential to do it that way. But if you put raw honey in hot tea, it's not raw anymore. So it's usually, I say, start with one teaspoon and go up to maybe 4 teaspoons before bed.
So that's not
and
that
can be
much.
Life-changing. It's not that much.
And why does it have to be raw?
Well, the study that I found, I think that one's in the Bulletproof Diet book. The study that I found showed that the raw honey is the stuff that goes to liver glycogen. But when you pasteurize the honey, it just acts like normal sugar in the body. So it goes to muscle glycogen. And since liver glycogen is more available for the brain, mm-hmm. and we're trying to make the brain do it and still allow you to be in ketosis. Because if you have less than 15 grams, maybe you have some MCT oil with that honey, you ought to be able to hang in there with ketosis. Or you cycle in and out. You're in ketosis for 3-4 days and then you cycle out. But if the raw honey trick doesn't work, and I've written like a dozen plus articles on sleep hacking, and I have a challenge for it because it's been such a problem for me. And now I get like 2 hours of deep and an hour and a half of REM, 6 hours on a regular basis.
That sounds beautiful.
It's life-changing. But I did not have this 5 years ago. I've worked really hard on it. But the other thing, collagen protein, because I'm like the guy who made MCT oil and collagen cool. Collagen protein from grass-fed cows, so you don't get the glyphosate that would get in there otherwise. That stuff makes a huge difference for another group of people because of glycine. And glycine is the dominant amino acid. Glycine is the third most common detox pathway. So you're dealing with mold. And so the number one detox pathway is glutathione. You can get that as a supplement. Number two is glucarate, calcium D-glucarate. That's a supplement. Number three is glycine. So if you look at all the mold toxins that you've been exposed to, that's the order of operations for most of them. So that collagen protein that we talk about for, you know, nice hair and skin and all, well, it is a detox protein, but it also has electrical properties as a chemical in the body, in that it drives the fascia, and mold interrupts electricity flow in the body because it reduces mitochondrial membrane potential, which is super technical stuff. But the bottom line is when you have healthier connective planes, it can lower stress in the body. You'll also find that people call collagen animal carbohydrate or animal starch. And there is a study that shows that collagen can be broken down by bacteria in the gut into butyric acid. So for people like you have a really hard time with any plant, including something like acacia gum, which is usually a soluble fiber most people handle very well, that could feed good gut bacteria to make more butyric acid, collagen may work for you. So collagen before sleep, just maybe one scoop of it would be a really good idea. And there's lots of good brands of collagen. Just make sure it's grass-fed out there.
Okay. I'm going to try that before I release this episode and see if that makes a difference. I have not tried collagen to see if that would make a difference.
So if you wanted to just go all in, try grass-fed honey mixed in, you know, room temperature water with... So you got honey, collagen, and a little bit of MCT oil. And then you've hit all three of the pathways. You'll have enough keto energy because you'll get some beta hydroxybutyrate, which comes out of the MCTs. You have some collagen, right? And then you have the raw honey. And if you sleep like a baby, then you know. And if that still doesn't work, here's what happened. The mold made the mast cells in your body overactive. Mast cells are your immune cells. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like firewalls. And imagine if you have those alerts on your phone, right? And it's like bing, bing, bing all the time. Well, if your immune system is getting bing, bing, binged all the time, well, maybe you could turn that down. And this will sound totally crazy, but try a Benadryl before you go to bed. And if that changes your life, well, there you go. You have allergies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I have used before. Not Benadryl, but the same kind of thing, Dramamine. It's like it's gravel.
Slightly
it's
different pathways.
Slightly different, but yeah. I know there's overlap. So that works. If I'm super stressed out, like if something bad happens and then I get nightmares or something.
A lot of mold people, if you use Claritin and Pepcid AC, that can work really well. So
I hate Claritin. Claritin gives me like this horrible crawling sensation and lower back pain and things. I avoid Claritin. Yeah.
So that means you have some sort of histamine issue going on as well, which is underlying it. Your mold caused a histamine issue, but it gets more complex when you get into histamine. So, and this is why with biohacking,
I definitely have a histamine issue. I mean, okay. I've got many issues, but there's definitely a histamine issue there. If I eat anything aged, like I can't do aged meat at all.
I can't either. Still. That stuff is so not good for you.
Not. Like, who came up with the idea that moldy meat tasted better than not moldy meat? I was like, do you want it to be 120 days old? No. Who told you that tastes better?
You know who told you that? The guys who didn't have refrigerators in the late 1800s. And it was the only way we could preserve meat. No, on my farm, we have about 25 pigs, 25 sheep. We go to the ethical butcher here and like, no, hang the meat for 3 days. Don't hang it for 10 days and then freeze it. And magically, everyone feels good when they eat it and it still tastes great. But we have this belief that if you age meat, somehow it's going to be better for you. But what it does is you can waste a third of the meat in moisture loss and then having to cut off all the black parts where stuff is growing. Like, why do you want to eat? Hold on. A fungus that eats meat? You're going to eat that, cook it rare, and you're going to put that fungus in your body?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem smart to me. That seems not good.
It doesn't seem smart at all. No.
There's a lot of people get tired and want dessert after they eat aged meat. They don't know why. It's because of that response. Histamine makes you crave sugar.
Oh, that's interesting. I know a lot of people.
You got a lot going on.
Oh, I do have a lot going on, but I know a lot of people too who are like, oh, I can't eat beef, even if it's grass-fed beef, I can't eat beef because it upsets my stomach. I'm like, how old is the meat you're eating? Have you only eaten aged steaks? Because it could be that.
How old and how burned? Those are the two big things. And honestly, take a quarter of a Benadryl when you eat a piece of aged steak, and magically you feel perfectly normal afterwards. And otherwise, you feel super tired and hungry
and thirsty.
Oh, that's
weird. Ooh, yeah. I'm gonna test that out. That's fun. Just take an antihistamine and see what happens.
Yeah,
cool.
It'll totally change your ability to go to a restaurant and eat something that you want to eat. And I love it because living in a moldy basement, like there's some predictable stuff that happens. The whole lime versus mold thing where they're both real, but the mold caused the lime. I don't know. Lived through all that, hacked all that stuff. And where you are now, you have like five more levels of performance above where you are. And you're going to get to the point where you're like, I have this resilience that I don't even believe is possible. I just know because I had to do it. And shouldn't have cost me $1 million. I'm just lucky I got to do that.
That's interesting. Okay. So the next question. So I'm just going to use this to like solve my health problems. But the next problem is, so I've been on an all meat diet. All my arthritic symptoms are gone. My mood is good. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty happy. My digestion is good. But I was hoping that at some point I would be able to introduce plants back in and vary my diet. I'm not one of those carnivore people that's like, I want to do this forever. If I have to do it forever, I'm happy I don't have arthritis, but that's not the goal, right? The goal is to get some resiliency back, which is what you were talking about. So I've tried, I can't tolerate any probiotics, like not at all. I get arthritis when I take them. I've tried a number of different types. So I don't really know where to start. I've tried incorporating plants back in and I've eventually dropped them because I'll get arthritis. My skin will break out. I'll get bloated. Even if it's like very small amounts and they're cooked or pressure cooked, like I'm trying a bunch of different things.
What kind of plants?
So I tried organic apples with no skin, pressure cooked, like baby food. Like I'm more resilient than I was, but it was still eventually I ended up getting arthritis. I tried pressure cooked blueberries, organic blueberries. That didn't work out. So then about 6 months later, I was like, well, maybe I'll try greens. And I know a lot of people have things against greens, but lettuce was one of the things I tolerated really well that didn't give me arthritis.
Yeah, I was
going to
suggest you start with lettuce.
Yeah.
And you said it did or did not cause arthritis?
No, it didn't for a really long time. Like when I first went low carb, I was eating a lot of different vegetables and I didn't have arthritis. And then things changed and I started getting arthritis from them. But I couldn't do lettuce either. I got bloated. I got tired, just passed out afterwards. And then the next morning I was like puffy and eventually the arthritis came back and I was like, fuck it. I'll just wait and see if something changes. But you know,
do you ever take betaine HCL, the stomach acid with your veggies?
I didn't try betaine when I reintroduced them. I tried betaine before, but even at the low dose, I could kind of feel burning and was like, I think that's a sign that I don't need extra stomach acid. So I didn't continue it.
It might be worth trying with the veggies or taking a really strong digestive enzyme with them. Enzyme. So it contains pepsin.
Okay.
Would be a really good thing for you. They make plant-based digestive enzymes, a lot of which come from fermentation. And they make animal-based ones, which come from usually from pork. The animal-based digestive enzymes are going to be the ones to work with for you, even if you're eating plants, just because they'll be more familiar to your system. And lettuce is something that most people handle pretty well. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you handled it for a while. So you may need to vary a little bit more. On a typical rotation diet, you eat something from a family of foods only once every 4 days when you're getting tied into it. Also, if you look on my show, I have an episode with a Stanford researcher who wrote The End of Food Allergy, where she talks about introducing very tiny amounts of food back in. And what I suspect is going on with you and what I've seen in so many people, there are these five things I talk about in vegetables that can cause problems. There's oxalic acid and there's lectins. Well, your body makes 1,000 different types of lectin every day. This is a very common type of biochemical that just means these are proteins that stick to sugars. It's not that big of a deal. And then in the plant kingdom, there are many, many different types of lectins. And I would say, here's the big problem, lectins. But when people go all out, say, I'm never going to eat any lectin again, I've seen people get more sensitive than they were before. So what you want to do is, for brief periods, figure out which ones are the problems. And newsflash, grains and nightshades are the issue for almost everyone. Beans and legumes for a lot
for sure,
more, but
for
a little
sure
bit less than
me,
the grains.
Yeah.
But after that, like, do you really have to worry about like
lettuce,
squash? Well, lettuce shouldn't have any lectins, but do you have to worry about squash? Probably not. So like you get rid of the big ones and most people are just fine. And like, I don't worry about, say, cashews. For the vast majority of people are fine on them, but some people can't handle those. But almonds are worse than cashews for most people. So like you kind of pick whatever you're going to do that works for you. But if you eliminate everything, it can take a while, like a year or two of very tiny introductions to get it back in. And the question is, do you really want to get it back in? So I would say carrots, maybe celery. Yeah. Most people handle celery, fennel. And if you have a specific problem with nitrites, that's different. But generally, those are pretty good. And if you did just those, you'll probably end up handling cucumbers too. Avocado, you can get to if you want. They have some omega-6, but not too much. And all of them have dangerous compounds. All of them also have polyphenols that can be really beneficial for you and a little bit of bulk. You also might consider the prebiotic fiber itself, and it will cause bloating at first as you just kind of take the hits. Like you, most probiotics, even something like a kombucha, would just knock me on my ass for a couple of days. And have you ever been tested for candida or yeast in the gut?
Yeah, I don't have it anymore, but I did when I first started dieting. Yeah. It went away when I went super, super low carb, but I had it badly before I knew that
I did too.
It was bad.
Yeah. So that can be a factor that makes it more complex, but you're probably going to want to get some either acacia gum fiber. You can get larch arabinogalactin, it's called, but these are plant fibers without all the other bad stuff in the plants. So most people tolerate those and just a tiny bit of that with a probiotic. And when you said you can't tolerate probiotics, what that means is you haven't found the probiotic that works for you. I could put on 10 pounds on the wrong probiotics when I was really sick. And it's because your gut bacteria are highly disrupted. I take 60 grams of prebiotic fiber a day because that's what people live the longest to. But I don't eat that many plants and I don't eat a variety of colors and all that stuff. No, I eat the ones that I know are compatible with me and I don't overdo it. And it works very well, but you end up getting there by figuring out what works. I'll tell you, kale is not good for most people, even if they say it is. And like that's just, you know, that is a fact. And I always take a lot of heat from the kale people, but know that
the kale people.
Actually, we talked, it's funny, somewhere around like the early 300 episodes on Joe Rogan, I warned him and his followers about kale. And then it took him till many, just this last year, he found, I was like, I had to quit drinking kale smoothies because of the oxalic acid. I'm like, dude, 7 years ago, I told you about that, brother. So your kale is becoming known, but raw spinach is just as bad. So you get these, yeah, you know, spinach and kale, raw vegan stuff. It shreds the gut. It pokes holes in it. And you don't want to be, Michaela, you don't want to be dealing with that kind of stuff. Because you have other things you're working on, like you're building your show and you want your body to work very well. So I would say when it's going to be a weekend, when you have a little bit of downtime, try probably the spore-based probiotics.
I tried yeah, spore-based and I tried like, I didn't try it with a prebiotic fiber, was still like tiny, tiny amounts. And my body was still like, fuck you, Michaela, after about 5 days.
You know what? Do that with antihistamines. I bet you'll work through it. You're going to have to probably take some hits.
And just are like
you
on a regular? Retrain the immune yeah, system, kind of. Just like calm yeah, down. Everything's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And are
God,
you taking charcoal and bentonite clay and all the binders? Because that's a big thing, especially on carnivore.
I took that before. I'm not taking them now. Like after about okay, a year of the carnivore diet, I was like, I don't have symptoms unless I eat something wrong. And I stopped, like it took about a year before I felt really good. The entire time I was losing weight on carnivore, I'd have like up and down icky feelings. And I figured it was just me getting rid of whatever my fat was storing. Like I wasn't really sure what was going on, but
yeah. A carnivore diet or anything that makes you lose weight like that will cause you to burn fat, and your fat stores pesticides and heavy metals.
Yeah. And that's what I feel.
I have an older post called the Rapid Fat Loss Protocol, and the subtitle is how to lose weight faster than you should. Because people who go on that protocol, they get brain fog unless they're amplifying the detox pathways at the same mm-hmm, time. Mm-hmm. And so one guy lost 75 pounds in 75 days I was working with, which is ridiculous, wow, but he had a yeah, lot of weight to lose, right? So what's happening when anyone goes carnivore and starts losing weight is, okay, there's a shift in your gut bacteria that may be beneficial, but probably isn't. And we're not quite sure. There sure are lots of studies that say you should have some soluble fiber. There are more questionable studies about bulk fiber. And I'm much less of a fan of that, the insoluble fiber. But if your gut won't handle it, fine, do whatever it takes. You know, go carnivore for a month or a year. But then what do you do? And if your gut bacteria is going to have to shift again, it normally would shift seasonally anyway, right? So in summer, we would eat more vegetables and even fruit, right? And then in winter, we're like, okay, unless you have some potatoes in a cellar or something, mm-hmm, you know, there's some fall carbs you get, but then winter, it's keto, it's carnivore. And I think that, in fact, not, I don't just think, I have seen the studies that show that there's a change in your gut composition seasonally. So you may actually say, all right, it's summer now. So if it's summer, maybe you want to do a few more veggies and then go back more carnivore in winter and see if that helps you. Because I do know that you're going to get to a point where you can eat food that's compatible with you, that's healthy, and it won't look like what most people eat. But that's because most people eat food that really isn't good for them and they pay greatly for it later. I also know that if you never eat a carb again, the odds of you living as long and as fully as you can, they go down. But you might be unique or it's right for you. But most people eventually do kind of what my friend Paul Saladino did, where he's like, you know what? I'm doing really, really well in carnivore, but I'm going to add in honey and maybe a few low inflammation veggies. And you find what works for you, right? And you may be an 80% fat person or 50% fat. It's okay to be variable. And this is something that you see rigidity in the extreme keto people. You see it in carnivore. You see it in vegan. You see it in fasting. And Michaela, you are not an average person. Neither am I. Neither is anyone listening to this. We're all unique. So you start in the middle of average and then you move in one direction or the other. So if only lettuce works for you, fine. And if something else works, that's fine too. But as long as it works. But if you're still struggling and you're so limited and you're, you know, constantly breaking out or something, you just haven't solved it yet and you got to keep pushing.
That is the plan. That's the plan. I'm not too super rigid in any idea. And I do think that the goal of carnivore is it can help a lot of people who have so many factors and they can't figure out what's going on, limit those factors, get to a baseline level, and then figure out how to reintroduce. Like, I think that that should be the goal of most people and get some resiliency back. You shouldn't be stuck. I figure if you're stuck in one space, like if I can only eat, you know, like most of what I eat is like lamb or beef. If that's all I can eat and I can't eat anything else without getting arthritis, then there's still something wrong, obviously.
Yeah, there is something wrong if you can't eat something besides those without getting arthritis. And it's funny because in the Bulletproof diet has a 3-week plan where you don't eat anything that's not in the green zone, and it's grass-fed meat and a very limited number of veggies and a limited number of fats. And like, do that for 3 weeks, and that's enough for the vast majority of people who didn't have mold exposures and whatever genetics that we have and all that. They go, oh, this is how I'm capable of feeling. What else can I add back in from this list of suspect foods? But for you, more foods are guilty, and for me, than for most people. And we're like, those foods just aren't ever going to work. Right. I don't think I'm ever going to enjoy a kale salad and not feel like crap the next day. Right. And that's okay. So you're going to get that dialed in. But right now there's some resilience that's missing nutritionally. And you will get to the point where you tolerate probiotics. But if you had asked me, you know, 7-8 years ago, almost all probiotics would just make me feel like crap. Right. Anything possibly fermented. If you go through the types that you're taking, many probiotics make histamine in the gut. But there are probiotics that make antihistamines that you can buy as well. So you need to go out and unfortunately spend $1,000 on different brands of probiotics and then take this one and be like, oh, that sucked. Wait a few days, then take that one. And you're going to find one and go, oh my God, that one worked. It's just, the trial and error sucks on that. I wish I could give you better advice.
I don't want to do that at all.
Here's one for you. Viome. They'll test your poop and then they make a custom probiotic specifically designed for your poop. That would be interesting for you to try. Viome.
I know Viome. That sounds so unbelievable. How do they have enough data? Like, I know most of your microbiome, you can't even plate. So how can they take that data and then make a probiotic for you?
That sounds real.
Like marketing. That's real.
So I was one of their first advisors. So yes, financial disclosure, whatever. But I literally, since the very early days, the reason they can do it is all of their tech came from the biowarfare, bioweapon detection stuff. So they took $2 billion worth of Los Alamos National Labs IP and they're using that. And now they have 250,000 poop samples, which means they've added 10,000 new species to the database of what actually lives in our gut that we didn't know about. And they've run machine learning and all on it.
They didn't do custom
probiotics until probably like 5 or 6 months ago. And okay, I'm pretty dialed in on what I do now, right? When I tried mine, I noticed the difference. Like the first day I was like, wow, it does feel kind of different. But I noticed just like more leanness for it. So I got to say for you, given that you're going to kind of be throwing darts, they're going to at least get you on the dartboard.
Okay. That's really cool. I'm going to look into that. Okay. How about this? This is a fun question. What are some biohacks or a biohack that you were wrong about that you tested out on yourself?
Well, I was raw vegan. I was like raw vegan because enzymes. And so I had blenders and choppers and juicers and all kinds of stuff, giant salad bowls to try and get enough calories in. And I fell into that trap as a vegan trap where, oh, I'm cold all the time. My thyroid is not working very well. I'm cracking my teeth. I have incredible joint pain, upper back pain, autoimmune issues, brain fog. I'm tired all the time. Maybe it's because I'm not vegan enough. You know, maybe I can be even more raw. Maybe this, you know, raw tomato pasta thing I'm making with stuff. Maybe I'll eat more of that. Of course, tomatoes are full of nightshade lectins, right? So that was a serious mistake that actually probably caused some harm. It took me a long time to fix. I also did the other thing where when I was testing out the bulletproof diet and I said, all right, how far can I go? And I did the 3 months of zero carbs other than that one serving of broccoli a day. And I was also, I would say, overfeeding by design. I was trying to prove, look, I'm only going to gain a couple of pounds, but I'm going to eat enough food to gain 20 pounds. I don't think that was good for me because I gave myself a leaky gut and it gave me an egg allergy. And eggs are actually, especially yolks, are really good for you. I didn't have an egg allergy before I did that. So leaky gut can come about from that. I should have protected the lining of my gut better than I did because I just didn't quite know some of the details. But that's why I'm also a guinea pig before I publish stuff. I'm going to try that out. That's why I recommend a cyclical keto diet where, you know, you can go really deep for a little while, but then you pop out for a bit to let the brain recover and then you go back in. And that seems to be something that works for a long time. Other biohacks that have not gone well. Well, one time, very early in the days of neurofeedback, about 25, 30 years ago, I bought my first neurofeedback machine. And this is when people mostly didn't know what it was unless you were a neuroscientist. And I had seen some effects by doing it at a doctor's office. So I said, I'll do it on myself. Well, doing brain surgery on yourself is probably not a good idea, right? So I learned after being in a few weird days where one eye is bigger than the other, maybe I should, you know, have a little bit more help on that. And I ended up starting, you know, 40 Years of Zen, which is doing very well. It's my neuroscience company where we do brain upgrades, like 5-day intense ones. But being a hacker, sometimes like I have the gear, I'm just going to do it by myself. So a couple of years ago, I put on one of our 24 channel caps, we call it the spider cap, but I didn't really bother to adjust the electrodes right. So one of them wasn't touching and I did some heavy duty training. It's sort of like if you were to go to the gym and you're doing like full power on the right bicep, but only half power on the left bicep at the same time. But I did that to my frontal cortex and oh my God, I was such a zombie for 3 or 4 days. I was like, what is wrong with me? I can't switch states. And it was like being addled all the time. So I called up our in-house neuroscientist. I'm like, dude, I think I screwed something up. And we looked at the data and he's like, Dave, come on. So we undid it and I overweighted the left bicep cognitively and we fixed it. But if I hadn't had a neuroscientist there, I would have just walked around for months being kind of an idiot. I would just say, be careful with your brain.
Be careful with your brain. Like, that's good. Okay. What else? Are there any supplements you suggest most people take?
You know, if you're not taking vitamin D and vitamin K and vitamin A, you're probably doing it wrong. There's almost no one who gets enough vitamin D, and it has to do with changes in our atmosphere. It has to do with the fact that we're indoors most of the time, that when we're outdoors, we usually wear clothes. I did run some experiments on myself where I'm in Hawaii for 6 weeks and I'm pretty much in the sun as much as I can. Probably, in fact, I know I got some skin damage from that much sun. And I tested my vitamin D levels and they were still low.
Yeah.
And it's because we have this high variance in vitamin D receptor genes. So for me, I need to take 15,000 IUs a day. Or I simply do not have adequate vitamin D because I basically have like a Pacific Islander's vitamin D receptors and a white boy's skin. Mm. So that combination is not good. So you have to do your D. And magnesium, like everyone is magnesium deficient. We're just not getting enough of that. So if you were to do just magnesium, D, and K2, many people now are taking vitamin D because they've heard vitamin D seems to lower your risk of dying from all viral diseases, including the famous ones, which we shall not name here. The ones that rhyme with chocolate cake, which is the new hashtag for it. And well, if you take vitamin D and you don't take vitamin K2, vitamin D drives calcium into tissues. That's good. Unless it drives calcium into your penis or into your arteries. You don't want calcium in your scar. So what keeps calcium where it belongs? It's vitamin K2. Not K1 from kale. That doesn't work. It's K2. So take your D, take your K2, take your magnesium, and you're going to live longer and you're going to function better now. And those are just, everyone has to do it. Fortunately, D and magnesium are dirt cheap and K is moderately expensive, but not crazy.
Okay, that's interesting. My vitamin D is always low, and I've tried like everything. I was taking 10,000 IUs a day. That didn't seem to work either. Then I tried intramuscular shots, which I was told are a good idea or a bad idea, depending on who you talk to. That actually bumped it up. It was the only thing I've ever done that bumped it up. I'm fairly tan now, so maybe it's okay right now, but also maybe not. I don't know. But
well, tanning is different than your D levels. So I'm relatively tan as well, but my D levels, if I didn't supplement, wouldn't be there. Also, and this is important for everyone listening, even if you're taking your vitamin D, you have to turn it on. And what turns on vitamin D is sunlight. So you've got to get sunlight in the eyes without sunglasses and on the skin, even if it's just for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes a day. What ultraviolet light does to vitamin D is it sulfates it. It makes vitamin D sulfate, which is what you really need. So you take the supplements and then you turn it on. And if you're like I am up in Canada in winter, it's tough in midwinter. You're not going to get much of that stuff. And there's nothing wrong with using a little bit of a safe tanning bed. And there is such a thing as a safe tanning bed.
Okay. Cool. Well, I guess the last question that people should know about are, if people have to just cut out a few foods to make them feel better, what are your top evil foods?
I am going to answer this in a way that you probably don't expect. It's from the end of my fasting book. The hardest fast of all is called fasting from hate.
Okay, fair.
Literally, it's going for 4 hours without thinking bad things about any person, anything about yourself, or even any food. So literally 4 hours where you just don't think bad stuff about people. It's the hardest fast. Right. And it's part of the spiritual fasting discipline, which is different than high performance work fasting. And so instead of answering the question of what are the foods you should avoid, honestly, taking that time to just turn down the responsiveness and the anger and the stress. And if you look at the news, you're going to absolutely immediately have negative thoughts. You go, oh, I just broke my fast. Damn, what's going on here? So I'm going to also ask people watching this to think about that with food. So you can look at, you know, a kale and spinach salad with tofu nuggets on top, and you can sort of throw up in your mouth the way a sane person would. But when you get it dialed in all the way, you can actually realize there's no reason or need to feel revulsion to that. You can just look at that and say it's not food. So we look at a bowl of rocks, we don't feel revulsion to that, we just know it's not food. And you're going to get to the point where you drive past a fast food place, you don't see it anymore because it's not food, right? And you're going to look at stuff that's not food, even if other people are eating it. And you might feel compassion for the people who are eating it because it's like they're punching themselves in the face and they haven't figured it out yet. But you won't be angry and you won't be upset. You'll just be like, you know what? Maybe they'll see that my skin is better and I'm healthier and I have more energy. Maybe they'll ask me someday why. But in the meantime, I'm just going to shut up and eat. So if you want to know what to eat rather than what not to eat, I could answer that easily. And what to eat is anything that ate grass is probably going to be good for you. And anything that is a plant is much less likely to be good for you. So if you were to take a plate and if you want vegetables, which I'm not opposed to at all, lettuce is a relatively safe one, surprisingly. So look at some lettuce. Most people tolerate avocados pretty darn well. That works nicely. Most people tolerate olives, but not everyone. And you don't want tons of olives because they have some omega-6s, but you can eat things like that. And make sure that you have grass-fed butter, grass-fed meat, and some fish, but probably not too much. And if you did that as the primary things you eat and you never ate fried stuff, and you said grains and beans just aren't food for me, you would probably love your life and love your gut, and you'd wake up without sore joints. Your back wouldn't hurt. Your skin would glow. You wouldn't have pimples. And more importantly, your emotional control over yourself goes through the roof. And I think, Michaela, you know what I'm talking about. When you're tired and foggy like that because you ate the wrong stuff, you yell at people you love. And when you have enough energy to regulate your emotions, you're actually kind. And that's why this matters so much.
Yeah, I completely agree. A lot more patience, right? And you don't get that spike of adrenaline every time something slightly annoying happens.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. So I'm a lot nicer when I eat the right way. But my resilience now, even if I eat the wrong way, I have more control than I did 10 or 20 years ago. But some of that comes from personal development. But I will tell you, if you take the most enlightened guru on the planet and you feed them garbage for 2 years, they're not going to be as enlightened. So food and our environment is a part of what makes us nice to each other. And that's so important to recognize.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. That was very interesting. If people want to find you online, where should they go?
Well, go to daveasprey.com is where there's 3,000 blog posts, several challenges that are free. Moldy Movie, if you care about toxic mold, it's a gift. Moldymovie.com. And Bulletproof Radio is pretty well known as a podcast. I'd love to see you guys on there.
Thank you very much.